You are listening to an entertainment program put together by a company called Financial Ineptitude. Anything said on this show is not an endorsement or professional advice. Would you really want to tell a court of law you were suing us because you thought taking financial advice from two idiots on a podcast put out by Financial Ineptitude was a good idea? Really? Clown hat, smiley face.
Financial Ineptitude presents Two Bulls in a China Shop. You can find our podcast at twobullsinachinashop.com or just search Two Bulls in a China Shop wherever you stream your podcasts.
Well, hello and welcome to the China Shop. I'm Shopkeeper Dan, and with me as always is Kyle, creator of financialineptitude.com. How are you doing today, Kyle?
I am doing great. I could not sleep last night, so I took some children's Benadryl. Yeah, I was supposed to go to the store.
But instead you stole the Benadryl from a child?
Yes, exactly.
Excellent.
Man, I slept till I got up at like 7. I was supposed to go to Costco or Sam's Club, and I was like, you know, fuck that. I'm going back to bed. I slept for another 3 hours. I felt glorious. I finally feel rested.
Oh, well, congratulations. I'm excited for you. That's a wonderful feeling. Right. I've been searching for years.
I know.
Oh, folks, come on into the shop with us today. Sit back, relax, rage against the hedge machine. We'd love to welcome any new listeners just joining us. We're here smashing our way into a complete set of fine china, sharing those ever-growing strategies for trying to maximize gains and cut losses. If you're new to the shop and stock trading in general, you can always check out our knowledge center on financialineptitude.com or give one of our beginning trading episodes a listen. We have all those links in the episode description. Best place to be, though, is follow that link to the Discord server. Kyle and I get on there every day.
Every day.
We're sharing charts, trade ideas, answering questions, having a good time. And when you do join that server, don't forget to send us a message with your email or mailing address. Sorry, don't forget to send us a message or email with your email. Don't forget to send us a private message or email with your mailing address. We'll send you a smash-it-yourself mug or shot glass straight from the shop. We're just so glad you're here. We have a lot of fun. It's always better with friends.
Always.
Fantastic show for you guys
today. And we're getting more friends.
I love it. I love it.
I know. So weird.
I know it's weird for you to have friends, Kyle, but I've had a few in my life, and it's a good time.
These are the best kind of friends, too, because I don't have to go hang out with them to maintain the friendship.
No physical proximity required.
Exactly.
Oh, thank the Lord.
Exactly.
Oh, we got any show news going on?
We do. We've got the episode with Shahir Abrams coming out this week that we recorded.
Oh, yeah.
Really good crypto episode. So we're looking forward to releasing that.
That was a great episode.
Yeah. I don't think he knew what he was getting into. I think he didn't know that we were...
Yeah.
Not a typical stock trading. Yeah. We had fun.
Yeah. It was good. Very good time.
Vico's coming back at the end of the month. Let's see. Then October, we've got Matt Rayner and Anthony Fatsies. Scheduled our new beginner episode with a local dentist. So I'm looking forward to answering some of his questions.
Mm.
And ChangeBridge is now scheduled. That'll be at the end of the month.
Yes. The ETF guys. Yes. I can't wait to talk to them.
Me too. Oh, and also, I think we owe a big thank you to our first donation.
Oh, yeah. Was it Chris?
It was Chris something.
Do we have to give out his last name?
Oh, no, we don't have to.
Yeah.
I guess thank you, Christopher.
Thank you, Christopher.
Thank you very much. I think I got your email on here from when you filled that out, so be on the lookout, because we're probably going to be sending you a thank you ringtone.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I've got some music work on my plate here, Kyle.
I know. I sent you the lyrics yesterday. I'm really looking forward to this one.
Well, folks, we have just got a harrowing, hair-raising, hungry show for you today.
I am starving.
Plenty of market-moving news, stocks on the radar, and more options than a butcher at a petting zoo.
Oh, that's awful. Because of the animals or the children?
Oh, you went real dark. But I thought it was dark, and you were like, let's go a shade darker. Oh, reach out to us. We love your messages and comments on Twitter and Facebook. We love your questions on Discord. We got that link in the episode description. If you're old school, send us an email to the number 2bulls@financialineptitude.com. That's 2bulls@financialineptitude.com. Or you can give us a phone call, 725-22-BULLS. Maybe you got a hot stock tip. Maybe you want to tell us about a great trade you just made. Or maybe you're just hitchhiking through Oregon trying to mind your business and some shady local sheriffs start trying to kill you. They drew first blood. It doesn't matter. We love it when you reach out. Oh, I think it's time to talk about the bet.
Let's do it.
Bet time.
And as I'm getting used to doing, I'll go first.
As is tradition.
Yeah. I picked AMD. I had a bunch of plans for taking profits that never materialized.
Yeah, it's got to go up first.
Yeah, it did go up a few times, just never quite nearly as much as I thought it might. Opened the week at $105.26. Finished at $103.88. Kept trying to spike up and then kept selling off. Took my total down from $489.97 to
$483.55. Ooh.
Still not too far out. I've been putting some good stop losses in. My stocks even haven't been triggering those, so I'm still within striking distance. One good week can really turn this around.
You're still looking at a 15% to pass me.
Yeah, that's only if you don't lose anything.
Well, that's true.
What did you?
I shorted Johnson & Johnson, and you know, I was looking at this before the show today. I was looking at the chart. I was like, my analysis was spot on. It broke that 100-day moving average. Why didn't I buy puts on Monday?
Oh, I thought you did. You didn't back that one up? Oh.
No, and I really should have. Yeah. Like, it opened, Monday it opened, Johnson & Johnson was at $167.92. I sold half of it when it got down to 165, and then it finished the week at 164.75, which brought my bet total up to $534.15.
All right.
Yeah, hold the applause. Hold the applause. It's just $10.
I got some bad news for you, Dan.
Oh, no.
Random also decided to short a stock. It took Kiwi, Q-I-W-I, opened at 842 and finished at 817.
Oh, no.
So Random is now sitting at 543.54.
Oh, God damn it.
Mm-hmm.
Who rolled that dice to get it to short?
Oh. I know. Why do you keep making it harder? Keep making it harder.
Damn you, Random. Oh, wow. I'm going to put that on my tombstone. Fuck you, Random.
All right. Last bit to get through before we jump into the news is our poll question.
Mm-hmm.
We asked who'd win in a celebrity cage fight between Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos.
Yeah.
18% went with Jeff. 64% went with Elon. And another 18% said it was too close to call. So a lot of people siding with Elon on this one. I don't disagree.
Did we get any good blow-by-blow commentary?
No, we did not. I wrote that I thought that Bezos would probably, his lawyers would probably get very favorable terms for the match, but Elon would probably like replace his weak bones with, you know, steel and just dominate anyway.
Is it,
yeah, we're definitely
time for
rambling.
Some news? Yeah, yeah, a little bit. Keeps people on the edge of their seats. When are they going to say something interesting? Surely it's going to come right now.
Let's just play a song.
All right.
Well, it's all for the money. Tune to the show. Need a good story so my margin grows, or won't you? Listen to all our news. You might learn some things with the China Shop Market News.
Okay. Well, Kyle, any big headlines you're itching to talk about?
I thought you had one that you were really wanting to...
I do. I just, you know, always like to give you the opportunity if I can think about it.
Inflation is really starting to be a problem.
What? Inflation? You don't say.
The headline of this, yeah, inflation challenging stock market underpinnings as investors look ahead to the Fed meeting. There's been a lot of selling pressure lately. I think a lot of this is having to do with... you know, the threats of the inflation. So wage pressures, supply chains disruptions from COVID-19 are adding to these costs. And a lot of these companies are having a tough time passing on the inflation to, you know, the people who have to purchase all their stuff. The consumer price index did missed the estimate for, you know, on the good side, and it was climbed 0.3% when it was estimated to be 0.4%. And the consumer price index, it was up 5.3% in August, down from 5.4% in July. But there's still a lot of concern. And then you couple that with the Federal Reserve looking to maybe ease up on the bond purchasing, you know, the qualitative easing or whatever the fuck you call it.
Tapering.
You know, there's a lot of...
Yeah, they're putting, what, $160 billion a month, is it?
Oh, God, is it that much?
Yeah. Yeah, the Federal Reserve is purchasing like $160 billion worth of bonds every month to prop up the economy.
I don't wonder why it keeps going up.
Yeah.
This is the quote I like. Inflation is moving in the economy like a pig through a python. Jade Jacobs, head of research and strategy at Global X. It's a little bit of a whack-a-mole right now, he said.
A pig through a python. I love that.
So inflation data released September 14th by the U.S. government showed a cost of living rose at a slower than expected pace in August. The consumer price index was still elevated at 5.3% year over year. Prices last month fell for airfare, hotels, car insurance, used vehicles, but the cost of food rose sharply, while prices also increased for new cars, gasoline, home furnishing, and rent. Rent has been going nuts lately.
Yeah. If you don't already have a place to live, this is the worst time I've ever seen to try and find one.
And there's been some sneaky ways that they're trying to hide inflation, too, that George keeps talking about. If you listen to his morning market updates on the TradePro channel, he keeps talking about, like, there's little things that you don't really notice, like packagings are getting smaller, like less rolls of toilet paper on your rolls, or you know, paper towel sheets, like little things like that.
The one of the convenience stores near my house liquidated all of their king size M&Ms, and I bought a bunch because they were cheap. And the new ones that hit the shelves are smaller, like by half an ounce.
Really?
They're half an ounce smaller. Yeah, and that's probably why they liquidated all the other ones, is they didn't want people to see them side by side.
I bet you're right.
So it's the same price, and you're getting less M&Ms.
What's that Mitch Hedberg joke he used to do about, like, the Hershey's bars, where they stamp, like, the brand into the chocolate bar? He says that's just a sneaky way to rob you of chocolate.
Yo, yeah.
I wonder if those stamps are getting deeper, too. Which...
Right. Yeah, it's stuff like that. That's how they hide it.
Yeah. There's a lot more of that going on. Anyway.
The 99 cent only store selling shit for $5. What's that about?
What kind of world do we live in? I guess Dollar General doesn't mean everything's a dollar. They're just all round numbers.
Fuckers. Oh, yeah. Inflation's a bitch, and you can't run away from it forever. It's the pig in a python. Eventually, it'll make it through.
And it won't be pleasant.
It kind of lines up with the story that I came across that made my jaw kind of drop a little bit.
What's that?
Apparently, investors have pulled nearly $62 billion from cash accounts this week to put them in stocks and bonds and gold.
Oh, so they are buying the dip. I was really starting to get worried.
Yeah. This was the fastest pace in more than a year. And it's betting, basically, you know, betting that the Federal Reserve is going to continue to support the markets. Oh, and I sorry, it's not $160 billion per month in asset purchases. It's $120. Apologies to everyone. It's only $120 billion a month.
That's still an unfathomable number. Yeah.
$51 billion went into equities, $16 billion into bonds, and $37 million into gold. So gold's the little toddler.
This is all before the Fed meeting, right?
Yes.
I think that was
through the week.
So when is that meeting supposed to be?
That next meeting is September 21st, Kyle.
All right, Tuesday.
Yeah, lots of people expecting the Fed to keep on propping it up.
Well, I think we talked about it last week. The voting member who thinks it's going to happen this year, he also said that he did not think it was going to happen on this coming meeting, like it wasn't going to be voted on yet. So people are probably just, I guess, trying to get the last little bit out of this run that they can.
Yeah. One of Bank America's strategists said, I guess Michael Harnett, said that liquidity hasn't been this easy since since July 2007.
Oh, I think the other statement is a little funnier. It hasn't been this easy since last week. Like, wow, that's really scary.
Yeah. Three months before the S&P topped out ahead of what they call the Great Financial Crisis. So everything's gotten super liquid. and the Fed's propping it up and talking about, well, maybe we'll start tapering, maybe we won't. I don't know. I'm glad that
they have to stop soon.
I'm glad that I'm learning trading and not long-term investing, because
I know, right? Yeah, because when this thing does come down, I think hopefully we'll be in a good position to capitalize.
Yeah, and not lose my shirt.
Yep.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens with the 21st, 22nd meeting when they talk about tapering. But so far, cash is just flowing right into those equities. A lot of big tech.
Can't really see that on the S&P.
Yeah?
S&P did not seem to really benefit from that inflow. So there's still a lot more people pulling out.
It's still gone 377 days without a 10% pullback.
Mm.
So
wow. Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Longest stretch since February 2016 to February 2018. So, you know, maybe we can keep the party going. Who knows?
Maybe. All right. Last thing on my list to talk about kind of ties in with what we're saying with inflation, about the wage pressures being something that companies are having trouble. I think you actually posted this story too, so I'm stealing it. But
do it.
Looks like companies are finally going to start getting rid of drug testing to start filling some of these positions. They've gotten so desperate that smoking pot will no longer disqualify you from working at places like Amazon.
Look, we don't care if you're high at work. Just we need people.
This actually, like, this whole thing, like, people talk about it being the great resignation. I actually think it might be, like, the greatest strike the country has ever seen.
Right. Like, people aren't looking to stop working forever. They just want good terms.
Almost 70% of employers worldwide are having trouble finding the people they need.
Yeah.
They're starting to offer not just higher wages and flexible schedules, but free college tuition for workers.
Yeah, I saw that. What was that, Amazon doing that? Or was this... Yeah,
it didn't say who. It just said that that's something that people are starting to do.
Well, you know, I just left my job, and I was at the grocery store, and we're talking to the checkout clerk, and I said, yeah, it's my last day. He's like, it's my last day here too, and he started talking about how he was able. It wasn't hard for him to go find a place that he wanted to work at more,
mm-hmm.
and negotiate a higher term of pay, and then just everything. He negotiated everything better,
yeah.
Because the worker has a little bit of power all of a sudden.
Worker has a lot of power right now. If you were stuck in a job that you don't like, start looking around because you can get some much better terms.
Yeah.
Almost 11 million job openings since July.
Yeah. Ooh, wow.
Yeah.
You know, after, what was it, the Black Death in Europe in the Middle Ages, when all of the peasants all of a sudden could negotiate their rights because there wasn't enough peasants to do the work?
Oh, did that happen?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. It was, you know, when you lose half your workforce, the other half that's surviving, they're like, oh, yeah, you want me to do all that shit? Well, guess what? I want it to be a little bit more equitable for me.
Yeah.
I don't care if you are the Prince of England. Get the fuck out of here.
I didn't vote for you.
Yeah, I didn't vote for you.
Listen, daft women hanging out in ponds loving scimitars. It's no system for a basis of government. All right, we're really digressing now. Whoa. What else you got?
There is a big crisis going on over in China. They're calling it China's Lehman Brothers moment. There's a giant real estate property company called Evergrande. It's the second biggest in China, and it's about to default on its debts. And
that's not good.
No. And there is nothing but speculation about what's going to happen. Like it's such a big moment that this company is going to default on $300 billion of debt. That people are like, well, it's just Lehman Brothers all over again.
More like Never. So how does that work in China then? They actually can buy properties. I thought they were communists. Don't you like get everything assigned to you?
No.
Oh, I thought that's how communism worked. I thought you just show, you know, you wait in line, you get your weekly food rations. Everybody shares everything.
You know, I guess some communist countries are like a 1950s American grade school film strip on what it's like in the Soviet Union. Thanks for sticking with me to the end. I didn't know if I was going to stick the landing on that. Well, that's just it. Is there a communist nation with socialist policies? But even, you know, everybody uses currencies, right?
Yeah, they got a lot more capitalism in them than communism, I think, at this point.
It's just capitalism exists on the national stage.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it has to, unless everything becomes strict barter, which is not what we need.
No.
You know, China has to exchange currencies for foreign goods and services. That's just a fact, you know. So
mm-hmm.
they've got their own like an economy. You know, people make money and they spend money. And apparently, their companies go bankrupt just like ours. Ha! You're not so different, China. But that is one of the speculations of what might happen is China, the government, might step in and just say, oh, you're too mm-hmm. big to fail. Where have we seen that before?
That's, yeah, yeah. They have a lot more leeway to do that, too.
They actually do, yeah. For sure.
China also stepped in. You remember that Ant IPO that everyone we've been watching for?
Yeah.
Like, they're making them divest their lending arm, I think it was. I'm speaking from the hip because I don't have a story pulled up. But, yeah, you know, they're breaking up some of those portions of Alipay.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm like, no, you're too big to live.
This is its own company. You don't get to have these two together. So everybody in China is worried that this property company is going to start offloading and selling its assets to stop the bleeding, mm-hmm. which could make real estate spiral down. You know, they would be just dumping a ton of property on the market. You know what happens when there's more sellers than buyers?
Yep.
Yeah. So we'll see. I'm excited to watch. I'm anxious to watch. Don't want to put a positive spin on it. Sorry, China. I know you're listening. You listen to everybody.
No. We don't bow to China.
No, not at all. I'm watching because this could be a really big moment for their economy. And if China starts spiraling in a bad way downward economically, it's going to ripple through the world.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They own a lot of American debt. And then what if they need that money all of a sudden and they call it due, you know, that it's going to.
I don't think they could do that.
Well, we'll see.
That's like loaning money to the school bully. You're going to go up to him and demand your money back.
Oh, you think China's too scared of us to demand its money?
I think, I don't know.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
Maybe that's a discussion we don't want to have. Just say good luck enforcing that because, yeah, you might just destroy everything.
Yeah, take it all down. All right. Well, let's see. Do I have any other stories? I don't know if I've got.
I'm out of the general stories. I got some stuff in stocks that I want to talk about. But
all right. Well, then I guess it's time to talk about how Two Bulls in a China Shop is brought to you by the lovely Sue Pullen at Fairway Independent Mortgage.
Still.
It's still brought to you. Wait, or is she still lovely?
No, well, both.
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 Both. Fairway Independent Mortgage is an equal housing lender, and Sue Pullen is a certified mortgage advisor who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She's got years and years and years of experience helping thousands of people purchase, refinance, even reverse mortgages, if that's your thing. Sue will help. She's licensed in 27 states, so reach out, see what she can do for you. There's a really good chance she's licensed in your state, and if she needs a new license, you know, we might just call her up personally and ask her to do it.
She'll do it.
She'll do it. Yeah,
she'll do it to help you.
She's done it before. Yep. Yeah, she's a fantastic lady. Reach out. Give her a call. 520-977-7904. Or you can shoot her an email, spullen, @fairwaymc.com. That phone number again is 520-977-7904. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number 2289. Sue Pullen has an MLS number 2060448. That email again is spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone is 520-977-7904.
And Two Bulls is also a proud affiliate of Trade Pro Academy.
Trade Pro?
Trade Pro Academy is an educational platform that offers institutional trader development programs to new and experienced independent traders. Translation?
Mm-hmm.
Dan?
Trade like the pros.
Yes, that's right. Trade like the big institutions.
That's right.
They got a great staff of highly knowledgeable and successful traders. As you probably know listening to our show because we've had most of them on.
Right.
Yeah, there's no better place that we found to learn all you need to be a successful trader. You can find them online at TradePROAcademy.com or use our affiliate link in the episode description. It's a great way to support the show and improve your own knowledge and skills. As we mentioned last week, we're still working on trying to get a deal so we can get turn that affiliate link into a discount link. So stay tuned for an announcement on that.
All right. Sounds good to me.
All right.
You ready to talk about some trading?
Yeah.
All right.
You say you want a ticker that wins. The bell just rung. It's time to get in. Ups drive us wild. Drops drive us crazy.
Dan, I had a quick week, so I'll go through them. I only made, I think, three real moves that weren't part of my, you know, monthly plan.
Yeah.
I traded IBM. I bought puts at $1.59 and sold them for an average of $2.01. I picked those up after reading through some of the ChangeBridge short positions and noticed that IBM was like the highest weighted short on their portfolio. So when I was looking at the chart, I was looking at the levels and don't remember what the exact level was I was looking at. I was like, oh yeah, this is going to fall. And it definitely, IBM seemed like it was really tied to actually the futures, because I was watching futures and seeing like the correlation between them and IBM. Every time futures would drop, IBM would fall with it.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's a big company, so it's probably one of the main things that makes up, you know, the one of the indexes.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting watching that. I mean, it wasn't perfectly correlated, obviously, but it definitely seemed like it was. Let's see. I picked up some shares of Venture Point.
Oh, yeah.
Bought those after the interview went out. I don't know why I feel like I have to wait. It just feels more ethical to wait until everybody has a chance to hear that interview before I purchase anything or make decisions off of it.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you do have the money to move that stock price.
No, I mean, I probably could if I put all of my capital into it, but I definitely didn't do that. The shares are at 40 cents. And after talking to Dr. Adams, I mean, like, I think the floor for a buyout at this point is a 200 to 300 million valuation. That would put the price at like $2 to $3, somewhere in that range.
Oh, wow.
That's before all the other stuff that they're talking about is, you know, goes into effect. The 3D integration, they're looking at 4D capabilities. It's just GE's planning on this massive rollout that should be coming up here soon. I think they said the GE launch budget was, you know, like dwarfs their 3-month operations budget.
Oh, yeah.
At Venture Point.
Yeah.
So definitely thought it was worth taking a shot at. I picked up a couple thousand shares at 40 cents a share.
Okay.
The other one I did, this one was not as good of a move yet, but the jury's still out on it. Palantir. I bought $30 calls on Friday after that really strong green candle pushed the stock over the 2880 level I was watching.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching it for a pullback, and it didn't really pull back until I bought it. So, you know, just spending 3 weeks learning patience, it seems like I still got a lot more to learn.
Yeah.
I could have definitely picked that up a lot closer to 28. I think it just barely missed the 28 retest that I was initially waiting for. So I bought those for, I think, $1.08 average. I did put a stop loss on them, so that just missed getting triggered when it did hit that pullback, and then it came back up and closed close to that level again. I do like the fact that it has a gap that still needs filled above 30. I think if it can see some strong momentum coming into next week, it should fill that, I think. Make a nice little turnaround on that. Flip those shares for, you know, double, hopefully. Sorry, options. Then I also sold an AMC call. I sold a $50 call at the beginning of the week and then bought it back, made 100 some bucks on it, and I should have just let it ride. I don't know why I got greedy and thought it was going to go back up again. But I sold another $45 call for, what was it, $6. That one for October.
Okay. That's your quick couple trades for the week, huh?
Yeah, you can cut out the AMC stuff. You can trim it down if you need to.
Oh, yeah. I played with some Disney puts on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
I bought $177.50 puts at 83 cents, sold them, oh, probably 20 minutes later for a dollar. You know, not the big world's biggest gain, but a solid move on a day trade.
Yeah, for 20 minutes of work, yeah, that's a great return.
Right. So on Thursday, I moved out of all of my AMC. I sold the last of my AMC at $46.75.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I know.
No, your reasoning is sound on that. Yeah.
Right? I need all that cash to do my day trading options stuff, so I had to sell the last of my longs. Goodbye, AMC. It's been a long ride since $13.
Honestly, I think that's probably a smart move, because I feel like that... I'm actually starting to feel like hanging on to AMC and... the other meme stocks is really holding me back from being able to fully enact a real trading plan, because I got these exceptions that keep hanging on, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I felt it weird. It felt very weird for me to open up my Ameritrade app and not see AMC on there. I was like, whoa, I didn't realize I had an emotional attachment to that stock.
I do. I definitely do.
See you later.
I think I might do what you did. I might just sell calls on just about everything and then just leave a small bit of it to kind of treat it like a long position for the rest of my portfolio and not really mess with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I need to do something similar.
And then, you know, I got clever, right? I like to be clever.
This is always good.
I bought Disney puts and Palantir calls right before close on the 16th, because I was like, it won't be a day trade if I sell them in the morning. and
it won't.
It won't unless Disney spikes in the morning. So I bought the puts on Thursday at 86 cents, $180 puts. Sold them in the morning at 50 cents. So. Ouch. And then Palantir, I bought $30 calls at 42 cents and a couple more at 40 cents. And wouldn't you know it, if I was listening to the options call with Vico, and he was like, okay, just sold out of my Palantir. And I was like, I'm not done with this. So I could have sold them at just over 50 cents,
mm-hmm.
maybe like 52 cents. Instead, I cut out. And when it got back down to 40 cents, missed my exit.
Oh.
And then I'm sitting there watching Disney bull flag on Friday. And I was like, this is it. This is my lotto Friday. Disney breaks out of its bull flag, volume looking good. And I picked up calls at $1.03. And Disney just fucking turns around, drops.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up selling out at 52. So. I didn't place a trailing stop. I didn't follow my own plan of like, hey, Dan, before you start doing this, go watch all those videos and then sit with Kyle and make sure you understand how to place a trailing stop. Also on your options. You don't want to risk all your capital. And there I go. And I fucking took over twice the loss that I had intended.
Ouch.
So those were all my trades.
That's tough, because your entry or your reasoning for trying to get into that sounded pretty solid. You had a pattern, you had a breakout, everything sounded right except for the just getting out when it didn't work.
Yeah. I was not wrong to make the trade, the entry. Mm-hmm. My entry was good, but my exit was not.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to win every time, you know what I mean? We're looking for high probability trades. There's no such thing as a perfect trade.
Yeah.
You know, you do this and you'll make money every time. Like, no, you can't do that. That's impossible. What did George say? Right, if that's what you're doing something illegal. Like,
yeah.
there's something else happening. Like those guys. Hey, look, like those guys that were making those Netflix calls, buying those Netflix calls.
Yeah.
The insider information.
Somebody's going to be calling you if you're doing too good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anything you're looking at this week going forward?
I actually am. I'm looking at Pfizer right now. They just had an article come out Friday night that they're recalling all of their Chantix smoking drug and smoking cessation drug.
Oh.
Because it's got high levels of nitrosamine, and so they're a cancer risk.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, anytime a pharmaceutical company is recalling every single one of their pills that are out there in the world.
That's been around for a long time, too, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that means there's going to be some lawsuits coming up. Oh, man, that's not good for Pfizer.
Apparently, it's not something that's supposed to be in there.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just the stuff that was produced and distributed from May 2019 to September 2021. So no big deal, just 2 years.
Oh, man. Yeah, they're going to have some lawsuits on their hands.
Trying to quit smoking so I didn't have cancer. And then they gave me cancer.
I'm looking at their chart right now, and they just kind of bounced off of like that 43-ish level yesterday.
Yeah.
If that breaks, I mean, I'm looking, I don't see support coming in again until 40, between 38 and 40 again. If fall through that 43 level.
Yeah, looking at their daily, they peaked recently at 51.85. It's all been bear from there. They came down, they broke through the 20-day EMA, retested it, fell, they just broke through, and I would say even took 2 days of retesting the 50.
Mm-hmm.
Now, looks like they're heading down towards the 100. We got the 100 at 42.77. So the question is that the bounce on the end of Friday, was it support for that that moving average below, or what?
Oof. I don't know, but I'll be keeping an eye on it. I think if it falls through that 43, if it falls below 43, I'll probably want to pick up some puts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm definitely eyeing puts. If you look at the 15-minute chart on Friday, it did hit that low, and we saw some huge buy volume come in to lift it up to give it that that tail.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how this plays out.
Oh yeah,
Monday.
Yeah, because it could just be the first test of that support.
Oh yeah,
I'm liking how it's retested each moving average. Mm-hmm. So for me, the money trade is going to be if it breaks that 100 and then tries to and then breaks the 100 as
comes back up to try to
100-day moving average and then comes back up to try to break it and fails again. Yeah, I'm buying puts.
Gotcha.
Puts on a nice $3 move downward to find the 200.
Nice. I've got a story for Intel I wanted to touch on here.
Oh yeah,
because AMD has been kind of like eating into their server market share for the last, year or so, ever mm-hmm. since we've been kind of paying attention to it.
Yeah.
But it looks like AMD has been like slashing the prices of their server chips to try to, fight back. And I was looking at Intel's chart. Oops, that's not Intel. Let's see. We've got a level that it's knocking up against right now at about 54.30.
Yeah.
Let's see. Since basically August 20th, I think that's when it posted its low. It's been trying to kind of, it's been on a little bit of a bull run from there. The question is that going to continue or not?
Yeah, well, it's been riding these moving averages down since April.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this little bull run, it had just dipped so much lower than the averages that I feel like it was just correcting back up. It tested that 100-day and then dropped.
Intel was getting beat up for quite a bit based on their, I think it was their chip structure. I think their, was it their 7-nanometer getting delayed?
Mm-hmm.
It was when I think that started. AMD's making progress with 5-nanometer. I think they've already got products out on that. But yeah, just Intel had been kind of getting beat up by AMD lately. I just wonder if now is about the time when that tide's about to flip.
I don't know. I don't like it on the daily. I'm still real bearish for Intel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks like it's between this.
Yeah, the daily chart definitely looks pretty bearish.
You've got the 20-day moving average is lower than the 100 and 200. You've got the 50 and the 20 below them.
Mm-hmm.
And it just met resistance at the 100-day. Yeah, that's really to me a big bullish sign.
Bullish? Or bearish?
That's a big bearish sign.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and you can even see how it's been riding these averages down, and it keeps testing that 100-day and getting knocked down.
Here's what what got me kind of looking at it a little closer is, you see that gap down August 20th,
yeah,
or April 20th?
From 62 to 58?
Yeah, look at every other gap this year. Let's see, there's a gap up on January 12th that got filled not too long after that. Big gap down on October 20th, that time frame that got filled. The big gap on the 27th that got mostly filled in October.
Okay, so you're thinking it's inevitable that the gap gets filled?
Well, I think I read a statistic that is over 90% of them get filled.
Well, all those other ones got filled pretty quick.
Yeah, and that's what I'm looking at. I'm wondering if if that gap's not going to fill here soon.
Gap from April. It's been almost half a year.
That's a good point.
And that gap down was the moment it broke under the 100-day moving average.
Mm.
And it's never been able to get back above it.
Okay.
Well, until now.
Well,
maybe there could be a time it comes back above. But until that point, 3-4 days ago, it just tested it. I'd like to see if it breaks 54, breaks under 54. Well, of course, I'd be day trading it. But here on the daily, like, I think it's going to, if it breaks under that 54, I guess, no, I'll say 53.25. If it breaks below 53.25, I'm definitely seeing some puts down to 51.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Sorry, Intel. I'm a bear.
Still a bear.
Still a bear.
All right. I thought it was worth looking at.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. No, that's a good one.
All right. Well, we're getting a little long here. Should we cover some earnings real quick and then move on?
Yeah, let's do it.
My motto's always been, when I'm right, it's right. So I'll wait and watch the charts and the change in price. When the movement's mostly finished at the end of the day, and we know the coming earnings gonna move it my way. Skyrockets in sight. Earnings call delight. Earnings call delight.
All right, nothing Monday. Tuesday we've got Adobe, FedEx, AZO. I think that's, don't remember what that is. Stitch Fix, SFIX. 22nd, General Mills and BlackBerry. And 23rd we've got Nike and Costco. And the 24th we've got Carnival.
Ooh, Carnival. They can actually report?
It said confirmed.
Okay. We'll see.
I'll believe it when it happens.
How much money I made? No, that's rude of you to ask.
All right. Crypto?
Oh, yeah, let's talk about some crypto.
Look at the news. What do you see? The cult of cryptocurrency.
Have you come across any amazing crypto stories?
You remember how Musk was making Dogecoin go crazy?
Yeah, of course. The old pump and dump.
All right, so let's see. I'm trying to see what he actually did. He posted a picture, a tweet of his dog. He got a new dog that named it Floki. And it looks like it's one of those Shiba Inu dogs, like the same dog that Dogecoin has. Yeah, and after he tweeted that, then a bunch of the knockoffs, cryptos of Doge went soaring.
wait. So he tweeted a picture of his real life dog?
Of a new little dog. Yeah, a dog that he just got.
And it just happens to be the breed that they based the Dogecoin meme symbol on.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it's named Floki. So then this crypto Shiba Floki, crypto symbol F-L-O-K-I, jumped 1,406% higher over 24 hours. Let's see, there's another Floki that is also up 104%. Dogecoin went up 2%. Baby Dogecoin. No, not baby. Never mind. Not baby Dogecoin. Yeah. So post a picture of a dog and then another crypto just goes through the roof.
Yeah. Wow.
Like Elon Musk is like the tea leaves of crypto, I think.
Yeah. People.
If you can figure out how to read them, you can make some money. But like, I don't blame Elon for this one. He just posted a picture of a dog. Like, people are going nuts.
Right? Okay, I pulled up the tweet. It's, yeah. Okay. And this is literally, might I remind you, half of what people do on the internet is share pictures of their pets, especially puppies and kittens.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, wow. They are really reading into this. It is literally a close-up picture of a sleeping puppy. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Okay, well.
Not his fault. I don't blame him on that one.
Yeah, I don't think he did anything out of the ordinary. I think you're right. People are just like glued to his Twitter right next to their crypto account. And they're like, okay, I'm ready to buy. What do you got?
I mean, if everybody else is doing it, if you're the first one getting in there, then yeah, it could work.
Wow, now I kind of want to try it, but I don't have the wherewithal to stare at Twitter.
Yeah, I don't either. Plus, I don't know enough of the cryptos to know which one everybody's going to associate it with. let's see. The other story I got here is just a quick one, but remember we were talking about the Ethereum network upgrade?
Yeah, big upgrade.
And how part of that was going to be like burning some of the coins.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, since that upgrade, over $1 billion worth of Ether has been burned.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's been 6 weeks.
So is that the crypto version of a buyback?
I don't know, because I don't think like Ethereum itself is spending any money to it. I think they just, it's the fees that are being used for transactions.
Mm-hmm.
That are just getting destroyed or removed from circulation. And it's looks like it's meeting what they wanted it to do, or it's meeting the intent of trying to make the gas volatility more stable. So even though like the fees are super high, like at least they're not like they're not unpredictable or as unpredictable as they used to be.
Right. And with deflation, they'll always they fight the urge to get higher and higher. You know, with the inflated asset and the value goes down, it takes more of it to pay the fee.
Mm.
So if they're using the fees to deflate, then it's going to guarantee that the fees stay reasonable and the value of not guarantee, but it's going to help the value of the crypto stay stable for sure.
Well, it's definitely helped the value. It's risen 22% since that upgrade happened.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right, what story do you have?
Well, Kyle, do you think crypto is an asset or a currency?
I think we decided a currency, didn't we?
Well, you're wrong.
It's called a cryptocurrency.
The European Central Bank.
On whose authority?
Yeah, right. On the authority of the European Central Bank. Their president, Christine Lagarde. Lagarde, I don't know. She might be Swiss. I'm just going to pronounce it Lagarde. She's drawn a hard line in the sand in an interview with David Rubenstein. This is a direct quote. Cryptos are not currencies, full stop. Cryptos are highly speculative assets that claim their fame as currency, but they are not. I think we have to distinguish between cryptos that are highly speculative, suspicious occasionally, and high intensity in terms of energy usage. Assets, but not a currency.
Huh.
Yeah. So, bam.
Okay.
Take that.
Hard to argue with that level of conviction.
Apparently, and I don't know why this is in the same article, but then it goes on to talk about Bitcoin's environmental impact and cites the Bitcoin Mining Council releasing a statement that said in the second quarter of 2021, the use of sustainable energy for Bitcoin mining rose above the 50% barrier.
Okay, so that's good.
So 56%. Is what they're saying. 56% of the energy used to mine crypto is sustainable energy.
So they must be converting all those gas power plants they're buying to solar.
Yeah, right, I guess. just use cow and pig methane. There you go. You know, back to the main story. I honestly, I don't know who wrote this fucking article. And you don't need to know. So she's... She's acknowledging the rise of stablecoins and how consumer demand is leading central banks to get involved.
I like the comment about the suspicious activity.
Suspicious activity, right?
I wonder if she's talking about Elon.
Right? Suspicious dog tweets. Your puppy, yeah. Sir? Who tweets a picture of your puppy? That's a pump and dump. No, to continue to quote her, you have those stablecoins that are beginning to proliferate. Which are a different animal and need to be regulated, where there is oversight, which corresponds to the business that they are actually conducting. And in all that, you have the central banks who are prompted by the demands of customers to do something that will make the central bank and central bank currencies fit for the century we're in, which is why we are now looking at all central bank digital currencies.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of having banknotes and cash in our pockets or wallets, we can have exactly the same thing, but in digital form. We want customers to have their preference. If they still want to hold those banknotes and cash, fine. So the translation is...
Crypto is not a currency unless it's the banks.
But when we release digital cash, that will be a currency. But none of that other shit is a currency.
Right.
So, yeah,
You can't make your own currency. Only we can do it, is what that sounds like.
I don't... Yeah, Right. I love the insanity of she's saying like these are speculative, risky assets. But we acknowledge that we're going to do digital dollars. It's probably going to be exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
But you can't. That's not currency. Oh. And the only difference is who issued it. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Well. It's going to be the end of the Wild West soon. I fear.
Speaking of the Wild West.
Draw, motherfucker. Pew pew.
Okay, Dan, what was your good?
Selling AMC.
Yeah?
Yeah. I should have sold it when it was at 50. I was looking at it and I was like, this would be a good time to sell. And then I was looking at the chart and I realized, like, I need this cash. I need to start going Monday. I need to start trading the options to pay my bills while I'm watching future levels.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, getting out into cash. It actually feels really good. Like, this weekend right now, I don't have any positions in my Ameritrade account.
Oh, really? You're all cash?
All cash.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah,
right. I've positioned myself. It's yeah, all cash. And
no worries. Don't have to think about anything.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what happens this weekend. And yeah, I still have the same amount of money, and I have more than enough I need to get me through to futures trading.
Mm-hmm.
I have that account's funded. So yeah, I'm feeling good about that. What's your good?
I've started actually using. I used stops on all of my option trades last week, even though there wasn't a lot of them.
God damn, I'm jealous.
Even though none of them triggered, when there weren't like trailing stops or anything, they're just stops. I put hard caps just to make sure that if any of these trades went against me, I wasn't going to lose 100%. And I feel a lot better knowing that I at least set a limit. I wish I was doing that a lot, you know.
This whole time.
I wish I'd been doing that, yeah, since we started this show. I can't believe it took me this long to start doing that.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was your bad?
My bad was... I guess it's the two things. Get open in those Disney and Palantir trades before close.
Mm-hmm.
And neither of them worked out.
I didn't like your thought process behind doing that either, too.
Yeah, I just wanted to be trading more.
Yep.
This is impatient.
Speaking of patience, that's a theme of my bad. It's my Palantir trade. I waited till the morning, and I thought I liked the level, but I think when I was initially looking at it, I was like, I want to see this retest down to 28, and then I want to buy them.
Yeah.
Instead, I bought it on the breakout of 29. That was a false breakout, and then it retested 28.
Mm-hmm.
But I did put a stop loss on it. The stop loss was pretty close to triggering, but didn't quite. I set it to where if it fell below 28, because since that was my level, that was where I wanted to get out if it broke past that. It held it. So that trade is still open, but I definitely could have gotten a much better entry.
Mm-hmm.
What was your ugly?
Oh, not positioning my Disney Lotto Friday trade with proper risk management, and I didn't have a trailing stop.
Mm.
So I ended up losing more than my risk management allowed for. And
so that means timeout then.
Hurts in my belly. I did stop trading immediately after that.
Actually, that was a good. Yeah, you did. So yeah, there's some good to take out of that.
Yeah, I remember we talked later in the afternoon and we were talking stocks. I'm like, I stopped watching at 9 a.m. this morning. Like, I don't know where everything's at. I walked away.
Sometimes you have to do that.
Yeah.
That's good when you can turn an ugly into a good.
Well, that's the idea. And it, you know, take that ugly, put some lipstick on it.
Right. my ugly is I think the last 2 days of future watching, the last little bit of my orientation, wasn't done with the same level of participation as when I started. A lot of that was like business stuff kind of distracting me, but I think I missed, because of that, I missed out on some of the last bit of learning that I could have crammed in there before I go back to sim trading on Monday.
Yeah.
I was still posting stuff in the Discord, but I wasn't watching it as intently as I was before, trying to like really see how everything goes together. I was kind of looking at them after the fact, more so last 2 days than I was, you know, initially when I first started watching everything. So I feel like I kind of cheated myself out of a little bit of opportunity there.
At least it's a minor ugly, and you had
It didn't cost me any money.
It didn't cost you any money, and you had many, many days of doing it, right? So
yes, that is true. And like I said, that was the end of my orientation, so I'll be going back to sim trading Monday. My plan with that going forward is that I'm going to sim trade for a week and then reevaluate based on those results, whether I need more time simming or if I'm ready to go live. So hopefully things go well. I'll be trading live and after next week.
Okay. Well, is it time for us to start talking bet?
I think it is. I get to go first?
Yeah. I mean, that's your deal.
Yeah. All right. Well, since I need a home run, and since they got earnings coming up, I think I'm about to go with BlackBerry.
Okay.
It saved me once before. I'm counting on them again. I'm taking BlackBerry, and I'm just throwing $1.50 trailing stop on it.
Okay. Sounds good to me.
What do you got?
I'm going to short IBM.
Are you?
Yeah.
Taking my trade?
Yeah.
All right. I like it.
Yeah. It's just, have you seen this chart?
Yeah. I kind of wish I held those positions a little longer, but once I, you know, made, I think 20% or 25% on their trade, I was like, yeah, that's good enough. I'll take that.
This past week, if I'm looking at the weekly chart, this past week, it just broke below the 200 week moving average.
I need to pay more attention to moving averages. I look at more of the short term ones. I don't look at the long term ones as much.
So it's the 100 day and 200 day, this is a weekly moving average, but the 100 day and 200 day are really big for institutional trading. You'd know that, Kyle, if you took the Trade Pro course.
I've been taking the futures course, not the options.
No, that's in the foundations, buddy. Bam.
Oh,
I'm calling up the teacher and I'm revoking your certificate.
I need to go back there and watch those again. You missed so much because there's so much information at once. Like, I just glossed over some of those tools.
on the daily, I broke down under that 200 day moving average. The red volume candle was really big. Anyway, short in IBM.
All right. Do you want any protection?
Yeah. I'm going to buy at 136. 50. It's my buy stop.
Okay.
No, we say 130.
Real tight.
137. We'll put it at 137.
Okay.
And then I'm going to take profit at one, we'll say 133.50.
And take profit means half?
Half, yeah.
Or everything?
Half.
Okay. All right. Can you give me an odd or even?
Even.
Okay. And a 1 through 12.
It's a 4.
Consumer, non-durable, NASDAQ. And we've got Tattooed Chef, Inc., TTCF.
Oh, I've come across that on Weeble.
Have you?
Chats. Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty erratic, looking at the daily. Wow, that's a really big candle yesterday. Big volume spike. Okay, good job, random. Solid pick.
Yeah, it may have... God damn it. I don't want to lose the random, Kyle.
I hope you like hot stuff.
Oh, god damn it. Okay, well, there you have it, folks. Tattooed Chef, TTCF is randoms. I'm short in IBM, and Kyle is long on BlackBerry.
Yay.
Yeah. Stay tuned next week. We'll have the results of that bet. And
like, share, subscribe.
Oh, yeah.
All that shit.
Yeah, yeah, that stuff. Till next time, folks. Happy trades.
Bye. Thanks for joining us. You can find us off air at twobullsinachinashop.com. That's the number 2bullsinachinashop.com. Make sure you check us out. Download us on any streaming network. Blah, 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 blah. You know what to do. Rate, subscribe.
Two Bulls in a China Shop is an entertainment program, and all thoughts and opinions expressed in the show belong to the hosts and not of any company. They are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide entertainment about stocks and the financial industry of trading. If you make trades based on what you hear in this show, you assume all risks for those trades.